Hello and welcome to the Wise Way to Yoga podcast. In this third episode, Cecile and I discuss why gentle yoga is not always safe and why listening to your body is not listening to your whole body intelligence. We also touch on body image and how it can affect our safety on the yoga mat and a lot of other fascinating topics so that you, dear listener, can not only practice yoga safely, but also so that you can learn to reconnect your mind and body, tap into your body's intelligence, and feel expansive in the process. For those of you who don't know us, Cecile is an Alexander Technique teacher, certified by the American Society of Teachers of the Alexander Technique. Cecile has been practicing in the Boston area for over 20 years, and is the author of the book, The Wise Way to Yoga, our main inspiration for this podcast. And I, Mona Kelly, I'm a multi-passionate yoga teacher, certified in Vinyasa, Kundalini, and Restorative Yoga. I am also a student of Cecile, which means that my yoga classes, taught exclusively online, integrate the Alexander Technique principles for a fun and safe yoga practice. I also practice Vedic astrology, one of the most profound self-knowledge tools, in my humble opinion. Welcome to episode number 3.
Hello, Cecile. How are you?
Hi, Mona. Doing good, although I had a little cold, so I might be coughing once in a while, but yeah. Don't worry about it. I'm fine.
All right. Perfect. It's good to know. So welcome to episode 3. Of the Wise Way to Yoga podcast. Today, I would like to talk about the concept of gentle yoga. We know that there are many yoga styles out there, Vinyasa, Ashtanga, Bikram, but also Yin and Restorative, who are more into the gentle yoga category. But I would like to ask you if you believe that gentle yoga is always safe.
Good question, because very few people ask that question. Most people assume that if they take a gentle class, gentle yoga class, they're 100% safe. The only people who know that's not true are the people who took classes like that and realized that it wasn't always safe. Now, why is it not always safe? There are lots of reasons. One of them is because the only way to be safe moving your body, whether it's yoga or not yoga, is to have an awareness of your whole body intelligence guidance and have an awareness of what it feels like when you function as an integrated whole. And that is not part of yoga teacher training courses, unless it's one of the one I'm teaching in.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yes. And so people focus too much on the perfection of the pose instead of the perfection of their functioning as an integrated whole. And so the minute you stop working with your whole body intelligence, then you're kind of at odds with it. Even if you do something gentle, if you remember in another episode, I talked about someone who had been enjoying yin yoga. And she wasn't even feeling pain while she was doing yin yoga. She really enjoyed the muscle stretching and taking the time, and she felt she was very mindful. But then she was in pain the rest of the time. And it turns out that she was overstretching her muscle without forcing them, but just with time and all this. And then she was achy all the time to the point she couldn't even go to work.
Wow.
So that was an extreme case. But the components are, it's not because it doesn't hurt that it's safe. You may be doing something that doesn't hurt, but that's reinforcing your habitual patterns, the one that are not serving you. And so you may even feel good doing that in yoga, and then it creates trouble for you off the mat.
So what you're saying is that the only concept of feeling good is not good enough to feel safe, to practice yoga safely.
Yes, so what I could say is that when you use your body in an integrated way, which means you're using your body in line with your whole body intelligence, it will feel good. But feeling good doesn't mean that you are working with your, it doesn't go both ways.
I understand. Okay? Yeah, that makes sense.
Excuse me. So there's that. And then there's also the fact that a lot of yoga teachers, because of the evolution of yoga, have not learned what I'm just talking about. And they pass on what they've been taught. And as we saw before, yoga comes from a patriarchal society where no pain, no gain. And these days, you know, people think they're far away from that. They're like, oh, no, I know better. But they still feel that no strain, no gain. Like if they don't strain a little bit, they feel like they're not doing enough. But strain is a precursor to pain. So we're not as far away from no pain, no gain as we think we are. And the other thing is there has been a lot of misconception coming from the 19th century and the bodybuilders and the beginning of fitness that have made it okay for people to assume that the army stance is the right way to stand up. So even yoga, a lot of yoga teachers do that, where they're arching their back, they're using their muscle to push themselves up in what they think is a good posture stance, when in fact this is working against your whole body intelligence. It's passing on a misconception about good posture that's creating more problems than it resolves anything.
Yeah, so. And I don't want to go completely off topics, but a practice like Pilates that was invented by Joseph Pilates, I realized that actually Joseph Pilates was in the army for many, many years, and he learned that whole that starting posture before you even start getting down onto the mat, and just the way you stand.
Absolutely.
It's very military. Also with the feet out, like we think that it's coming from the ballerinas, but it's actually coming from the military in Pilates. So it's good to notice, to mention that, because it's true that when you stand so uptight and straight, you can't sustain it for a long time.
It's not natural, no comfortable. So that's why people keep going from pushing up and holding to collapsing down and slouching.
Down, yeah.
And then what do? They go outside of themselves. They go to massage therapists. They go to, you know, people to fix the discomfort in their body. Or these days, I see there's an invasion of gadgets,
yeah,
to help your posture. But the latest one that I've seen is a little, it's like a necklace that has something hanging in the back, a little square, that every time you slouch, it reminds you.
Yeah.
But since people have the wrong idea about what it's like to sit up straight, the minute they're reminded, they use their back muscle to go up. And that is not sustainable. So
tip number one, do not invest money on those gadgets. It's not going to help long term, at least.
Yes.
Long-term.
And even short term, but it gives you the illusion that you're doing something good. But either you realize that it's not changing your posture, or it's changing your posture, but you're creating a lot of holding. Now, I want to say that actually, among all the gadgets for posture, those who remind you that you're slouching are the one that could have a good use.
Okay.
If people learn what I'm teaching.
Of course, yeah.
So if you really know how to release upward from your support and not engaging your back muscle and activating your whole body intelligence, then it becomes an asset, because it's like, yeah, it's not easy to remember every time you get lost in your habits. So they could. That's the only kind of gadget that I would support, if it's combined with education about.
Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah. And actually, also, we talk a lot about activating your whole body intelligence, and you know, for our listeners, we'll go into more details of what this really, in a very concrete way means.
Mm-hmm.
So. I just wanted to point that out.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's
going to be part of the next series of podcasts.
Mm-hmm.
Where I will talk about the postural mechanism, which,
yeah,
is something we are all born with. And I'll tell you more about that. And when I refer to your whole body intelligence, when it comes to posture, movement, and all this, I'm really referring to the postural mechanism, which was a mechanism designed for you to handle your best posture, best balance, and best coordination.
Yeah.
But given people don't know about it, they work hard at getting those things when they're given gift, you know, birthright. It's their birthright. Yeah. So, but we'll get more into that later. Yes.
Yeah. So you mentioned yoga teachers training, and yes. I've been in three different yoga teachers training. Two of them were pretty intense, and I also go to, you know, a lot of yoga classes out there, and I'm hearing a lot, listen to your body. But I believe you make the distinction between listening to your body and listen to your whole body and listen to your whole body intelligence. And I know you make the distinction between these three items. So could you elaborate on those?
Yeah. So when people say listen to your body, really what they mean is make sure you're not hurting yourself. Make sure you're not feeling pain somewhere. They're not even warning you about strain, just pain, really. And often it means you tend to focus on body parts. Whichever body parts is starting to feel uncomfortable, that's what you focus on. So listening to your body is really an approach where you're listening to body parts and pain to make sure you're not creating pain in the moment. Listening to your whole body is already better, because instead of focusing, waiting to see where you're going to feel discomfort or pain, you constantly be aware of your body as a whole. You're less likely to do something that's good for one body part and not good for another. And so an example is, like, you know, people talk about shoulder openers. So many people have a posture problem. They feel that shoulder openers is something great and everybody should do. But the issue with that is, yes, it feels good in the moment. And if you want to do it to feel good in the moment, great. But if you think you're going to change your posture by doing that, you're mistaken, because when you force your shoulders to open up, you're actually compressing the shoulder blades in the back. Mm-hmm. And anything you do to help your body should be good for every body part at the same time. You shouldn't have something that feels good for one part and then does something not so good for the other. So when you're aware of your whole body and you know that compression is not a good thing, especially, you know, so you're being alerted that you're doing something that's not so good for you, and maybe you do less. And now the third one is that that postural mechanism, that whole body intelligence knows better than your mind, better than your teacher, better than any books, what is right for you in this moment. And if you let it, it will guide you. And that guidance is even specific and of higher quality than just listening to your whole body. But you do have to listen to your whole body to be able to hear that guidance.
Yeah, so it's a little bit of a process of surrendering and trusting that your body knows better how it should align in a very specific posture or in a very specific life circumstances or activities.
Exactly. And the surrender is really, that's where there need to be a change of mindset.
Mm, absolutely.
Since the 19th century, people think that tensing your body is a good thing.
And controlling with the
mind. Controlling with the mind. Yeah. And tensing the body means you're getting stronger and you're developing willpower and all that. This is actually how we interfere with whole body intelligence. Mm-hmm. So in fact, instead of constantly engaging with our muscle, in being a slave to the mind that decides what is right, you want to stop engaging your muscle that way so that your body can engage for you. Mm-hmm. So you have to stop micromanaging so your body can, your whole body intelligence can micromanage for you. And when you do it yourself, you often could create damage, even as you're feeling good. When you let your whole body intelligence do it, it's comfortable, but it's efficient, and it makes your whole body benefit.
Yeah, and you know, it reminds me a little bit of, what if we were to have to think of beating our own heartbeat or breathing. We do those things automatically. So there is definitely an inner intelligence in our body. So why being so controlling when we're exercising or when we're practicing yoga in that matter? So.
And what I could say to answer this rhetorical question mm-hmm. is that we live in a society that has increasingly encouraged people to be in their heads. And so yes. often people are disconnected from the neck down. And yet it's also this, you know, the industry of fitness is still strong, but there's a disconnect from the head and the body. Mm. And so people exercise, but they're still very disembodied.
Mm.
And I had a personal experience about that brought me to all those distinctions that I'm making.
So do you mind elaborating on this?
No, of course. So what happened is that I used to exercise 3 hours a day.
Oh, wow. I've never been there.
Yeah.
And I'm too lazy for that.
Well, I was motivated because I have a very strong, compact body, and I can put on weight very easily. So I was always motivated to do my best in those, learning about nutrition and exercising. And in those days, I was doing what I thought was right and what I heard around me, which is the more you exercise, the more you sweat, the more you make your muscle work hard, the better, and you to keep trim and all that. So I was doing that. And at the time, I was working on a PhD. So I was like, okay, I'm attending to my mind. I'm attending to my body. I thought I was really in tune. But then I got married and I got pregnant with my first child. And one day at the library, I found my very pregnant belly squished against the table as I was studying. And I remember if I hadn't been pregnant, I probably wouldn't have even paid attention. Mm. But because I was pregnant, I remember thinking, oh my gosh, what am I doing to my baby? And right after, what am I doing to my body? And probably because it was my calling to work with that, that was a really deep insight for me, because in that moment I realized, wow, there's more to being in tune with my body than feeling my muscle when I exercise. So that was really a big, big, big insight. And that actually changed my career.
Mm.
I was a very successful PhD student, and I decided to find a profession where I was a teacher still.
So did you drop out of your PhD?
Yes and no. I was already at the end. I had done all the minor exam, all the minor courses, everything. And I even had written my first draft of my thesis. But then I had this insight and a little something that happened that there was a British teacher who came and read my thesis, and then he moved away and he took it with him. And had I not decided that I was moving in a different direction, I would have tried to get it back.
Mm.
But at that point, it was almost circumstances. I was like, okay, I don't have the energy for that. I'm about to have a baby. I don't want to stick with academia, so I let it go. So I have a PhD, it's called All But Dissertation.
Oh, okay. What is it? On which topic?
So the topic was the discrepancy that exists in the representation of sexual differences in art and literature.
Ooh, wow. Okay. Oh, well, I'm glad you switched career, or maybe not. Maybe it would have been interesting to hear what you have to say.
This distinction is something that we live with all the time, mm-hmm. and actually exercise, that distinction is at the core of exercise, because we try to strengthen that male side of ours, which was very strong with me when I was doing those 3 hours. But now it recreated balance for me to do the work I'm teaching, because I still can enjoy that male side, but I've also the advantage of being very connected to the female side.
Yeah.
And between the two, you can really function in an integrated way and be in tune with your whole body intelligence. So
that realization triggered your change of career.
Yes.
But you also had, from what I remember from your book, there's a story about you had your back pain crisis at some point.
Yeah, so
is that something
later.
You want to talk about
sure.
now?
Yes, so that came later. I had already become an Alexander Technic teacher, which is a 3-year full-time training. Excuse me. And I had already some years of experience behind me. I was at the point where I wanted to expand my practice, and I was taught that you need to find a niche. And long story short, I decided to go in the yoga niche because I could see how there was a need there. And I started writing a blog, of the matyogablog.com. And before I knew it, I was getting emails from all over the world, people telling me, oh my gosh, this last blog changed my practice. And so I kept at it. And before I knew it, I had 10,000 people reading, and then 20,000 and 30,000. So that's what brought me to write my book. But at some point in that journey, I woke up one morning and I had a nerve pain going from my lower back up my back. And I panicked. I was like, I'm an Alexander Technic teacher. That can be happening to me.
I'm such a fraud.
Yes. But then I did what everybody does. When you're in pain, you panic and you go outside of yourself. So I spent thousands of dollars for 6 months trying to get help from massage therapists and chiropractors and acupuncture. And when I had that pain, it was visible because my right hip was sticking to the right and my whole body was leaning to the left. So that was really scary. But 6 months later, after all, spending all that money, my right hip was still leaning, poking to the right, and my shoulder to the left. So I remember coming home after one of those massage or whatever and thinking, what would I tell my students if they had the same issue? Mm. And I heard my own voice responding right away. Watch yourself like a hawk and practice what you teach.
Yeah.
So I laughed. And starting then, right there and then, I started observing myself like a hawk. And of course, because of my training, I started noticing that when I was at the computer, I was leaning to the left on my elbow while I was thinking. Yeah. And so the first thing I realized is that this happened because I backtracked to being in my head, which I had, you know, I had gotten away from that doing the work I was doing. But for writing that blog, I went back in my head and it was not paying attention. So that was the first thing I noticed. So, of course, I chose not to do that. But then I noticed I was doing it in the evening when I was chilling out with a Netflix movie and I was leaning on the couch. So I stopped doing that. And then I started noticing in the house in different situations that I was putting more weight on the left foot. So I started observing myself like a hawk and eliminating.
So that was the hawk.
The hawk part.
Yeah, the hawk part.
But, and that would have made a difference already, but it might have taken way longer to fix. But I, every time that I prevented that and other times, I would activate my whole body intelligence. And it's very simple. It may not be easy to do because we have a lot of habits, which is why people take private sessions with me. But it's pretty simple. You release through your support. I mean, it's a little more complex than
that. Well, we'll go into the details of that in the next episode,
exactly,
right?
Exactly, absolutely.
Yeah.
But basically, I was watching myself like a hawk to see all the activities that was feeding that problem. And then I would activate my whole body intelligence constantly. In 48 hours, I already noticed a difference in my level of discomfort. And in 1 month, my whole body realigned itself completely. Like I didn't have to go.
Not surprised.
Yeah.
Not surprised.
So that was to me, I remember thinking, oh, a lot of people come to this work because they have aches and pains. I didn't come to Alexander for that. I came to Alexander because I was so aware of my mind and body not working together optimally. But now I had my story. I experienced what it's like to be in pain from not being paying attention and knowing things, and what it's like to literally apply what I'm teaching and see my whole body intelligence at work, fixing myself.
I'm sure this experience made you an even better teacher, because like you said, you came to that work not because of pain, but because of a higher consciousness of how your mind and body could be better aligned. But then with this experience, you actually could experience the pain and apply what you knew and what you teach to yourself. And I have to say, I twisted my ankle over the summer, I believe. It was not a serious, like, it's not like I broke my ankle, but it was quite painful. And I applied your teachings, and within a day or two, I was perfectly fine. It happened to me twice, actually, recently.
Yeah.
Once more recently. And the reason, of course, I twisted my ankle is because I was not fully present. Exactly. So obviously, there's also a preventative part of the work that you do.
Yes.
But if you get to, you know, hurt yourself, injure yourself, it's really amazing. It's like a little miracle.
I've had lots of situations like that, and yes, every time it feels like a miracle because we're not taught in this culture to trust ourselves. We're taught to go to the doctor, to take medication, to force the body to stretch and to force the body to do this and that. And we have lost that mind-body connection. We have lost that trust. And some people have had pain to the point they don't even trust their whole body intelligence. So when I work with students like this, I have to first give them an experience of how wise it is. Like in the first session, in a few seconds, I can give them an experience of effortlessness. And they're like, wow, like it helps them rebuild confidence in their whole body intelligence, which sometimes that's the first step.
No, absolutely. Well, actually, it's a perfect way to end this episode, because we will talk about how to activate your whole body intelligence in the next one, at least, you know, get the process started. And as you said, it's very simple, but I was doing this bike. I bought a stationary bike for my husband's Christmas gift. Yeah. And of course, I'm the one using it. It was kind of an indirect gift to myself. And I'm listening. I'm on this app, and, you know, you get motivated with music and you just go. Mm-hmm. And the teacher on the app said at the end, it does not happen in a day. It happens every day. And I think it's a great way to, I mean, it applies to a lot of things, obviously, but I think it's also, it applies to, you know, when you activate your whole body intelligence, it's not going to happen in one day, because we need to let go of a lot of bad habits that we've taken on when we're moving and doing activities. But if you apply it every day, eventually you're really getting more fluent in that language. So
yeah, and just to close on the topic of you know, body image a little bit. Is that, you know, it's ironic that I started when I was young, completely disembodied, because I was always sturdy, and being French, you know, I'm in a country where everybody's slender, and so I, you know, it was easy for me to disconnect and be in my head. And I, all this journey brought me to now I'm teaching yoga teachers to be more embodied. So it was a transformation. It shows through my artwork. It shows in lots of different ways. And yeah, this work has so many facets and so many benefits. And depending on what people need, they can find it here, because it's really about being all of who you are and functioning at your best in a state of expansion instead of being in a state of contraction. And
beautiful. Yeah, well, that's a beautiful way to end this. So you can find us. So where can we find you, Cecile?
So at the moment, there's still ofthematyogablog.com. You can connect with me this way. Actually, if you Google my name, Cecile Rainer, you're going to find a whole list of ways to connect with me. I have a Facebook group page, I mean. But soon I'll have everything under one umbrella, cecilerainer.com.
Okay.
But I'm on the verge of launching that.
We're still working
that.
On yeah. that.
Still working
Great.
On that.
Great. So, and I will put the links to our websites in the description of this podcast. And you can find me at monakelly.net, monakelly.net, not .com. It's a real estate agent at .com. This is not me. So monakelly.net. Thank you very much. And we'll see you next time.